You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not, is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch.
So, finally, after the international break, club football returned at the weekend, and it was like a particularly disappointing Christmas, really. I mean, not as disappointing as Christmas 1969, but disappointing nevertheless. Stoke lost, Oldham lost. I know you're going to ask me what happened at Christmas 1969.
I'm just presuming it's the wanting a bike, not getting a bike.
That's No, it's not. Is it a bike? Is it? It's too small for a bike. Stoke lost, Oldham lost, and Sky showed some of the dullest football ever on a stultifying Sunday. Wouldn't it be great if just once, because it's such a blinking, I mean, this whole circus theme that they've got going at the moment.
The greatest show in the world is right.
That's exactly how shallow it is, the way that they play. And you'd just love it, wouldn't you, if we went back to the studio just once and Gary Neville just said, well, that was a bit shit, wasn't it? Really? Do you know what? We're not going to talk about that at all because it was
If they just had the graphics ready to go. Shit Sunday. It's been a shit Sunday. Into the advert break.
Or like, you know, when teams, sometimes teams lose by, you know, large margins away, and the chairman in a fit of remorse and generosity offers to pay the ticket money back.
Yeah,
you know, you should be able to get some of your money back, shouldn't you?
You
paid for Sky Sports, saying,
yeah,
I'm really sorry, we weren't expecting that at all. You can all have a fiver back. You know, that's what should happen, really.
Just it'll just appear in your bank account.
Because there's only
a few letters they allow you for a thing.
Yeah,
so it would come with a message saying, yeah, reference, shit Sunday.
Yeah,
shit Sunday, £5.
Just shit Sunday.
It was terrible, wasn't it? That Bournemouth-Chelsea game, watching Pochettino getting booed. How many games in now? He's getting the patience there, isn't he?
I mean, honestly.
But if only they had, Chelsea, a player who could score a goal out of nothing, like Callum Hudson-Odoi did on Monday.
Yes, absolutely. They did a thing, I do want me to tell you what happened on Christmas 1969, by the way.
Go on.
I just presumed you'd want to. Okay, so I had wanted one of these, you know, like when you had the bows and arrows and the arrows had the little sucker on the end.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but this was a gun. It was a gun that fired these little sucker things, okay?
Yes.
And it was also like a clay pigeon shoot thing. So you stepped on something on the floor and a little thing goes up and you shot at it like that.
Yeah,
and that was what I really, really wanted. And and obviously, I only discovered this later. And clearly what happened was my dad went out on Christmas Eve with a couple of his mates and his brother-in-law, and they got legless. And he said, "Come on, we'll have a go at the old, we'll have a go at the old pigeon shoot."
Oh, he'd got it. He'd got it for you.
He'd got it. Unwrapped it and broke it. But that wasn't the terrible thing that he did, which is much, much worse than him breaking the present, was that he told me that Santa had been involved in a car crash and hadn't been able to come and probably wouldn't be all right until, you know, the new year.
Hadn't been able to come. I thought you were going to say that the sack had got run over.
Oh, no.
in the course of the accident.
Anyway, yeah, so back to Monday night. You were talking, I was also hoping
that, you know, that your dad had got into a fight in the toy shop on late on Christmas Eve with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, yes,
that
was what I heard. Yeah.
See, you're enjoying that. I saw you look off into the distance, imagining that.
I was actually trying to remember the name of a toy shop in Stoke when I was little, because, of course, in those days, you had your own shops, didn't you? They weren't all Toys R Us.
They weren't all chain.
There'd be a toy shop. Any old way. So Monday. Yeah, now this pissed me off while we're on the having our 5 quid back from Sky, okay? they used a new term that I've never heard before. Did you hear this one?
Uh-huh.
They said, "Let's look at the field tilt stats."
Oh, what? What the hell?
And you know what? I didn't even look it up to try and find out what it meant. It just disgusted me so much. The field tilt stats. And you know...
Is that the famous sloping pitch, is that?
That was exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. But it's so obvious. I mean, all these things... I've only just got used to assistant referees, you know, and assists themselves. But they've clearly got some sort of game analysis tool from the US, haven't they? Which will look at things. And you know when you're setting up your telly and it says language, English brackets US or English brackets UK, and they haven't worked out how to change it to English brackets UK. So they just come up with all this absolute fucking bollocks. And field tilt stats has really upset me. I'm going to have to... have a little bit of a sit down in a minute.
Oh, well, I know this has been a difficult week for you to concentrate on the football with the reboot of Neighbours.
Yes!
On some brand new streaming thing invented only for this, wasn't it?
Well, you can get it on several platforms, I believe.
Is it?
yes. But brilliant. It's got all your favourites in. Harold's back in it, and he's.
It hasn't got all your favourites in, has it?
Well, no, it hasn't got Max.
It hasn't got Max and Shane. No,
oh,
that's,
Danny.
That's those were the favourites when I watched it. I noticed that though. There was some great jubilation that it still has Guy Pearce in it, who came back for the finale. And now he's still there. He's still there.
Yeah.
But apparently mostly on FaceTime because he lives in Amsterdam. I'd wonder whether Guy Pearce would have all the old Neighbours storylines tattooed around his body in case he forgot them.
Guy Pearce became quite famous, didn't he? He was actually like a film star of some description.
Yes.
That's
what he became. Yes.
That's what he became. But what's brilliant is just like the old Neighbours, Mr. Udagawa never appears in the new Neighbours either.
Doesn't he?
There you go.
He's only referred to.
He's an absent protagonist.
Is he like Mrs. Mannering?
Indoors.
They did a bit of that, didn't they? I was pleased to see there were a couple of eye-catching headlines over the weekend. One that I saw was Hancock punched by pro footballer. So obviously I went to that straight away, and I thought, and it turned out to be Matt Hancock, of course, Celebrity SAS Who Dares Wins, and the pro footballer in question, Jermaine Pennant.
This is a massive, massive name drop. But when I heard that Jermaine Pennant was on Celebrity SAS Who Dares Wins,
yes.
I just was so tempted to phone Tony Pulis up and say, who is the least likely of all of your signings to have been on Celebrity SAS?
Who does? I think they should just change the title of it to Celebrity Who Punches Matt Hancock Wins.
So it's pro-celebrity boxing we're back to.
Isn't it? Well, I like Matt Hancock's quote, where he said, he was trying to big up his chin, at least. You know, he said, Jermaine is no softy, but it didn't hurt as much as I thought it was going to. Someone wearing his big boy pants. And I love the word softy, because that's so sort of man of the people, inclusive, isn't it? I used to read the Beano.
It's the Beano, yeah. It's Walter, isn't it?
Walter the softy, the Walter nemesis of softy. Dennis the Menace.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Who was basically just the another incarnation of Fotherington Thomas from the How to Be Top books.
And Matt Hancock also, of course, lost I'm a Celebrity, the other celebrity thing, to Jill Scott, another footballer who, as far as we know, didn't punch him. But football, it seems, is his nemesis. Walter the Softy being Dennis the Menace's nemesis. I think this ought to be a rule. If you lose on I'm a Celebrity, you shouldn't be allowed to be considered a celebrity anymore as a forfeit,
right.
Which would give it a bit of jeopardy, I think. A bit of much-needed jeopardy. I think we're all bored of the kangaroo testicle jeopardy aspect of it.
Or alternatively, you should have to go on Celebrity SAS Who Dares Wins and not be paid. Yeah. Just do the SAS course. That would be pleasing. Talking to courses, did you see that the we meant to mention this a few weeks ago about the new agents exams that they have to take. Have you seen this?
Oh no, I didn't see that.
Yeah, well you have to strangely enough, qualify to be an agent now. You have to pass some tests. There was a furore or a furore, whichever you prefer.
I prefer furore.
Do you? I prefer that too. Because some of the agents had been cheating during the exam and they'd been using their phones. And I thought, well, those are two things you need to be an agent. You need to know how to cheat and you need to use your phone all the time.
Yeah.
They should have got extra marks, not been chucked out.
They should. It's true. And speaking of headlines, I've noticed that a lot of headlines now, a lot of the sort of clickbait headlines on the internet and in the papers as well, in the tabloid papers, are about Gary Lineker pontificating about something. And there's been a great upsurge in Gary Lineker having opinions on things. And he seems to be in the papers every day. With something about last week banging on about Scott McTominay, and just today I saw suggesting that Mason Mount might one day replace him as the host of Match of the Day, and I thought, but it turns out, of course, that journalists aren't doorstepping Gary Lineker for his opinions. They're just sat on their asses listening to his podcast, The Rest Is Football, and translating every casual remark he makes into headline news. What a world we live in! Mason Mount apparently sat in his chair during the World Cup in Russia and had a go, you know. And apparently now he's going to be the new host of Match of the Day.
Yes,
apparently.
Mount takes over Lineker's chair.
Exactly. And he had a go in it in 2018, apparently.
But you get that. You know, that is what they do. They look at Twitter and then they'll quote Twitter and then that becomes a massive story, doesn't it?
Yeah, but actually my favourite headline of the weekend was Sweaty Balls Prove Hard to Handle in French Heatwave. And we've all been on that holiday, haven't we? But anyway, that's from the Rugby World Cup, of course, before we...
Yes, absolutely.
So it was, wasn't it, a weekend of... apart from the Sunday, which, as you've already said, was money back Sunday, Saturday was a weekend of thrilling late comeback wins, wasn't it? Comeback wins. Liverpool won down to Wolves at halftime, 1-3-1. City won down to West Ham at halftime, 1-3-1. Villa won down to Palace, 1-3-1, with two goals in injury time, the 98th and the 101st, and with a particularly exciting equaliser, only 3 minutes from the end of the 90, hit so hard. Did you see that?
Yes, I saw that. It was a cracking goal.
And I got Colombian Steve really excited yesterday when I bumped into him. Apparently, Duran is their great new hope. apparently, a young hope, Duran. Lots riding on him. And then Spurs, of course, one down to Sheffield United after 97 minutes, 1-2-1. Also 98th minute and 100th minute, which was apparently the latest ever Premier League ever
turning
back,
over
turnaround
from
thing.
Losing yeah. to winning.
And, but, yeah, yeah. but because, of course, they haven't been playing to 100 minutes until this season. So.
Yeah, yeah,
I was interested in the point that Paul Heckingbottom, the Sheffield United manager, was making at the end, that referees have become so hot this season on time-wasting that they're actually dictating during the match how Sheffield United are able to play. Because if Sheffield United are one up and, you know, and want to play out from the back, want to keep the ball at the back, and want to wait for Spurs to press them before they do this, so that, you know, so to give them options, they're not being allowed to do that because the referee is telling them, you know, he'd already booked the keeper for handling outside the box, I think. They're telling him that the keeper's going to get booked for time wasting if you faff about, you know, and Heckingbottom saying, but we want to play from the back. What are we supposed to do? And the referee saying, well, just kick it long. You've got to kick it long. And it's dictating the referees are dictating the tactics. And I think, you know, it's an interesting point. I mean, it's a little bit whiny when you've lost two late goals. But
Even and so, he did make a point of saying, I was saying this when we were winning.
At half time. You were saying it at half time. Yeah. But interesting, interesting stuff. I mean, the weekend's games did sort of perfectly highlight the great trend of the season so far. You know, the late show, hand in hand with referees lumping on incredible amounts of added time for time wasting and goal celebrations and substitutions. It said, I want to see a referee put up 12 minutes added time at a United game at Old Trafford and then have the camera cut away to Fergie in the stand looking at a bottle of wine in disbelief and then throwing it away. That's what I want to see. But apparently there have been 22 stoppage time goals in the 48 games so far this EPL season, compared to just compared to just 5 in the first round of games last season. 18 of those have come after the 90th minute, the others at the end of the first half. And incredibly, that's 19.4. It's nearly 20% of second half goals this season have come in added time. Yeah. And, you know, of course, we know now, don't we, deep down, that the 90-minute game is no more, regularly seeing 100. But it does give teams with a strong bench an advantage, gives a sinking feeling to those hanging on for a vital point, doesn't it, against the odds. I mean, the Spurs win against Sheffield United was the classic thing.
But that was the interesting thing about the comebacks was they would have all been great if it had happened to the other team. In all of those games.
If West Ham had come back against City.
Exactly. Yeah. And that would have made it much more piquant.
It's true. I was watching a match today, having not heard the scores because I was at the Oldham game, more of which later. But I managed not to hear the scores. So I was rooting for West Ham, rooting for Palace, rooting for Sheffield United. And oh, here come the late comebacks. I wanted money back from fucking Mount.
All those late goals, you know, and this only match day 5. There's another one that's just
I know,
in,
yeah.
Hasn't
oh,
it?
Oh
fucking
Christ,
match
worse,
day fucking it, 5. What?
I heard the Oldham game described as the Vanarama National League match day 10, and not just that, VNLMD 10. That, listed as that. Ah, oh, God, what a world we live in. But anyway, we'd be very at the end of the Spurs game. Oh, we'll be very interested to see what the fourth official puts up on the board. Oh, apparently he's written up that we're going to keep playing until Richarlison scores, however long that takes.
Well, isn't it quite interesting? Because of course, UEFA have said that this isn't going to happen in the Champions League, and this is, of course, but FIFA started it in the World Cup.
In the World Cup, in
we
Qatar,
took it from FIFA and took it into the league, and now UEFA, who of course hate FIFA, have said,
"We're not doing that." They hate FIFA like the Football League hates the Football Association.
One of the things I thought was instructive interesting this week was all of the headlines that said, because did you see that ITV have got England games for the next 2 years, I think it is.
Have they?
And it said, England win the right. ITV win the right to cover England games. He thought, no, they paid eight page
to the right.
And I thought, that's exactly what football is. Win and paid for are kind of the same thing as life drifts on, aren't they?
Kind of synonymous. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. Did you see there was the game which had a goal in it on Sunday? The big talking point as Arsenal played Everton was that Mikel Arteta, presumably acting under instructions from his Mr. on Overlords, rested, in inverted commas, Aaron Ramsdale and picked David Raya. And Raya always seemed like a strange recruit, didn't he, for Arsenal? I mean, he's in on loan, which is costing them $3 million, with an option to buy for $27 million, which is more than they paid for Ramsdale off of Sheffield United. And last season, one of the top keepers in the Premier League for Brentford. And it's odd, isn't it, that he'd come in to be a number two. It felt odd. And Ramsdale had his things all his own way last season. His number two was Matt Turner, who didn't really challenge him for the spot. So is this what Arteta wants? Someone to challenge Ramsdale? Or has Raya come to replace him? That's the thing that people are wondering now. Because when Ramsdale arrived, Bernd Leno was the number one, until Arteta gave Ramsdale a go after the September international break, and Ramsdale kept the shirt. And now Raya has come in after the September international break. Didn't have much to do against Everton, but did it, you know. And it's an odd one, isn't it? Having two number one keepers and keeping them happy. The whole Clemens Shilton thing from years ago, you know.
Is he
going to give them alternate games? Is he going to give them... what's he going to do?
It is. It's interesting. And, of course, we talked about this. And Raya came almost straight on the back of Ramsdale's admission that he'd found life very, very difficult when he first went there, and how supportive the club had been to him, and how difficult, you know, people don't realise it when they say things on social media, blah, blah, blah. And then they immediately said, right, we've got to get Raya in now, which was a sort of kind of a horrible piece of synchronicity, but he says he's got a plan. Does Captain Black?
Captain Black.
Yeah.
Well, he says he wishes he had the courage to swap keepers during a game. Sometimes, just to swap them about during the game.
Yes.
If someone's having a bad, he said, if someone had had a bad 85 minutes, he'd like to swap a keeper in for the last five. You know, which would be amazing if he did do it, if there wasn't a penalty shootout and a specialist coming
up. You must have seen that last night, Lazio's, which we're recording this on Wednesday, Lazio's keeper scored a goal very late in the game.
Yeah.
And you've got to think, well, you know, sometimes they do that substitution for a keeper that's good at saving, supposedly good at saving penalties in the last minute. Why wouldn't they just bring on a striker, if they know it's like the last corner of the play game?
You bring on Ian Ormondroyd. Give him the goalkeeper shirt, you know, and he's allowed to make a save if one comes along. But why has no one done that? It's true. Why has no one done that? Louis van Gaal, we're looking at you. Why did you never do that?
Louis.
The Arsenal-Everton game also had that rather strange goal disallowed for offside, which just illuminated another rule or law or usage, whichever it is, that they've managed to fuck up. They've managed to obfuscate and adumbrate and obscure to the point where, which is some defender playing the ball, playing someone onside.
Deliberately ordered.
And it's whether it's deliberate now. It's whether it's a deliberate thing.
It just said a touch.
I mean, basically this thing, it was Gabriel coming out from the back and he played a ball. And the key thing is, Nketiah is offside at the moment Gabriel plays the ball, if Gabriel is playing the ball to him, which he was not. The player who played the ball to him was the Everton player. And that's the thing, isn't it? If the original ball wasn't to him, he's not active. He's not the player expecting to receive the ball. I mean, it used to be, didn't it? It used to be when we were playing playground football, you know, that you wouldn't play offside, of course. But accidental. No. I'm talking about handball now. Handball. There were two states of handball, deliberate or accidental. And if the ball hit your hand, you'd go accidental, and people would either accept that or not. There was none of this unnatural body shape or, you know, how enlarging your silhouette or any of this. Imagine trying to organise, invent a sport and coming up with that. you know. And they've made a, I think they've made a right mess with the, because you hardly ever see it now, do you? Hardly ever see a defender playing someone being played offside because it's come off the defender. I think the last one I can really remember was the Germany South Korea game in the World Cup, which was the World Cup before last, even, I think, where there was a South Korea offside goal, but it turned out that it had been played through to him by a German defender and it was allowed. And you hardly ever see that now. Hardly ever.
I obviously living on my own now. Most of my new friends are from cyberspace, and one of them, Mr. Cole.
Mr. Cole, I wasn't expecting you to say that. Yeah. Okay.
he did say, he said, well, you know, now that that they've got VAR, so that's in effect phoning a friend. He said, why don't they put it to the audience afterwards? Which I thought was a rather lovely idea, apart from the fact that the decision would probably be Boaty Book Boatface. But, you know, it's not the worst idea in the world, is it?
No, it's top 10, maybe.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's practical. At all. Did you see the great story? From Austria, where a father paid for his or offered to pay for his son to get 10 minutes playing in the Austrian league, FK Usti Anad Labem, and they
that
said,
doesn't sound very Austrian to me.
No, because he's French. Anyway, so he paid 17 and a half grand, right? And this is a team quite far down the Austrian pyramid, which is, there's a phrase I never thought I'd say. I wish it had been Egypt.
Sounded more Egyptian than Austrian, that team name, but anyway.
It did. Okay. And another one of my chums, Brian Shepherd, pointed this one out to me, although I'd already seen it, Brian.
Because I'm everywhere. I'm on top of everything.
So he's 22, this bloke's son, all right?
Yeah.
Okay. And get this, he's never played a game of football in his life.
Oh, excellent.
So why? So why?
What, is he just good at keepy uppies?
I don't know. I think it's like a punishment.
Yeah.
It seems like
you will play football.
You will play football. Yes. Was that more like it?
You bring us on. You know, dad making the, you know, intervening in son's life. To you know, we've spoken in the past few weeks, haven't we, about feeling a bit sorry for Harry Maguire,
getting
stick from opposition fans, particularly Scotland and Arsenal, and the danger of him becoming a bit of a joke figure. And you felt, you know, when Gareth Southgate stuck up for him, which, you know, you wonder whether that was a good thing, really. I just emphasised the impression that he's the teacher's pet, you know, and you know how good that is for deflating bullying.
Things
got even worse. His mum stood up for him. She basically marched into the playground and shouted, "Leave this boy alone. Do you hear me?" You know that Harry went, "Oh, mum." I wanted to say, years ago, when Arthur Smith and I wrote An Evening with Gary Lineker together, you'll remember that, it was on in London, Arthur went on Loose Ends with Ned Sherrin, who it was in those days, who introduced him as the author of the play, asked him how it was going. And Arthur, you know, didn't bother to correct him. Didn't really matter. I'm not bothered. But anyway, I was on Loose Ends myself a few weeks later. They sent me to an England game at Wembley. I think it was against Turkey, with the idea of doing a review like it was a play, a theatrical style review of the football, which I did with jokes in and blah, blah, blah. And live on the air, live on a Saturday morning on Radio 4, Ned Sherrin read out a letter that my dad had sent him without telling me. And this was the first I'd heard of it, calling him out for not crediting me as the co-writer of the play when Arthur was on a couple of weeks before. It was absolutely mortifying. It was the mortifying thing.
I actually thought, when I read that, I thought, you know, good for you. When, first of all, it does remind you, one, that Harry Maguire is a human being who has a mother, you know.
Yes, yes.
You know, and people get upset by these things. I like that very much. When I was doing They Think It's All Over, we made a a joke about a West Ham player and being caught in flagrante by his wife.
Okay. And, Spanish team. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Deportivo in flagrante.
Deportivo in flagrante.
Yes. And his mother wrote to me.
Really?
You know, they've been trying to put this behind them. You know, it's a terrible thing. And, I was absolutely crushed by this idea. It was the most upset. I must have told you the story about my mum and the Wolves fans. Have I told you that?
No, no.
Well, I love the idea of, like, a mum is like every mum. Aren't they? In a sense. So we're coming out. I'd really been in my early teens, but my mum used to go to football with me and my dad, and we came out, and there was a Wolves fan. It had a Stoke fan's head by the hair, was banging it against one of those low walls that they have in front of terraced houses that denote some extra land. It isn't a garden, it isn't anything. It's just more bricks.
It's but anyway, the edge of the pavement, yeah.
So she goes, she just goes across and goes, "What on earth do you think you're doing?" And this Wolf fan, he's a big, this is like the 70s, he's a big hairy ass bloody bloke. He goes, he's Stoke, isn't he? And my mother goes, "Well, you're a very, very silly boy. You're a very, very silly boy. Go away right now." And of course, he just let go of this bloke's hair and wandered off. And then she goes across the road to a policeman and goes, "And you're no better. And you're no better, are you?" And I became aware at that point of the power of every mum.
Well, good old Zoe Maguire, she said that Harry works his socks off and has a massive heart. And it's hard not to think she started typing massive head and changed her mind halfway through.
He must be chuffed that Casemiro's gone there because he hasn't got the biggest head in the squad now. All right, we're going to take a quick break and then big, big tidings from Boundary Park.
Oh, Christ.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Anyway, let us ignore for a moment or two football's top table, to which Arsenal and Newcastle have returned this week in every bloody article I read about the Champions League, and consider instead the kiddies' table, tucked into a side room on plastic sheeting in case of spillages and other mess, where one gangly teenager sits amidst the mayhem with his bony knees sticking out either side, miserably picking half crayons out of his tomato soup. That, metaphorically speaking, is the Vanarama, the league beneath the league, where my team, Oldham Athletic, have been having a tumultuous time of it this week, beginning on Saturday away at Bromley, which is where, just under a year ago, the David Unsworth era began with a soul-shrivelling 3-0 defeat. It's not far from me, Bromley, but I arrived after the kick-off thanks to the bloody trains. I left loads of time as well. My train was delayed, but I was still just about going to get the connection until somebody pressed the passenger alarm trying to flush the toilet.
No!
And we were stuck at East Dulwich for bloody ages while that was checked out. Anyway, and they told us all about it as well, which made it even worse, but still. So I didn't see whether owner Frank Rothwell, the much-loved Wallace and Gromit character, made an impassioned speech to the away fans before the game in support of our beleaguered boss, as he did at Gateshead. He was there, though. I could see him in his distinctive flat cap. And I heard him as well, when Oldham went 2-0 down before half-time, and the away fans, some of them, started singing, "We want Unsworth out," "We want Unsworth out," as they do. "Hey," Frank was shouting, "stop saying that. You don't pay his wages. I do." Which seems a difficult road to hoe, doesn't it? It's almost the first article of belief for a football fan, that we can say what we want because we pay their bloody wages. Players, usually, we're talking about, but by extension, surely the manager too. Yes, Frank pays Unsworth's wages, but he uses our gate money to do it. So I became a little worried about him, particularly the possibility that he might be harangued, as he was at Chesterfield. And at half-time, I moved up and stood nearby. I don't know if I would really have intervened. Probably not, frankly. But anyway, no one was actually haranguing him. But fans were coming up to him and speaking calmly, sorrowfully, reasonably to him. They were saying, we're just not seeing any progress, Frank. And he was saying, we've all got to get behind the team. Defiant, unbending, but positive as ever. I met him very briefly myself. I didn't feel like giving him a hard time or anything, or even asking him a question, after all. In every respect other than the manager, he's done a fantastic job. So I negotiated the Praetorian guard of grandchildren he'd gathered around him, shook his hand, and wished him good luck. He has a hell of a grip on him, I'll tell you that. So I'm no longer worried about him losing the oars off his transatlantic rowboat.
Yeah.
Just before the hour mark, I was stood just in front of him. And just before the hour mark, optimistic voice behind me said, there's still time, you know. Someone else said, time for what? And the voice said, time to win this, 3-2. I'm not sure it was Frank, but he did go on to say, cracking cheese, Gromit. Anyway, immediately within seconds of him saying, there's still time for us to win it, Bromley got a penalty. Which keeper Matt Hudson saved, as it happens, a very satisfying save because it was hit really hard and made a really loud slap as it hit his hand. And so maybe the 3-2 was on. But then just a couple of minutes later, Hudson rolled the ball out to Shelton, 30 yards out. He was immediately mugged by two Bromley players who proceeded to pass it back and forth to one another before knocking it in. And it's hard to argue there has been progress if a year after a 3-0 defeat at Bromley, you roll up for another 3-0 defeat at Bromley. To his credit, Frank stopped behind at the end, apparently, I'm told, and listened to the fans asking him, what's the plan? I didn't. I got the hell out of there. And at halftime, honestly, halftime, listening to him, you'd have bet your house on Unsworth keeping his job. But something about that rubbish second half, something about the sorrowful pleadings of the Oldham fans at full time, must have changed his mind, because on Sunday morning, the club statement was out, and so was David Unsworth. So, the speculation has begun.
Oh, yes.
It's fascinating to me how many fans have suggested that previous managers might return. I mean, another Chesurrection, I could understand. But the lack of imagination, Jesus. Richie Wellens, who took us down out of the league, and now from 1-2, rather. Dean Holden, Neil Warnock. There's one bloke who touts Ian Dowie every time this vacancy comes up. And he hasn't managed anywhere for more than a decade, for 13 years, since he was at Hull in 2010. And he was only a consultant then.
I think the previous manager thing is that's a common trope. And it's a bit like when you haven't had sex for a long time and you think, I know somebody did have sex with me once. They might be willing to do it. they seem you know, not so disappointed.
they've shown that weakness before.
I've got a number somewhere.
Anyway, Ian Dowie, though, he does have one great thing on his CV which the others don't, which is he coined a word, bounce back ability. That's in the dictionary. But anyway, Steve Thompson was an interim. And also,
one other thing about Ian Dowie is, of course, when people say, you know, managing a football club isn't rocket science, he can go, yeah, well, actually, I have a degree in rocket science.
He has a master's in aerospace engineering.
There you go.
Yeah. So, Steve Thompson was in charge for Tuesday night's visit of York City in front of 6,500. He's an Oldham lad, never played for us, but his dad did, and so did his granddad. And he didn't really tweak the team that much. Yeah, on Tuesday night.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. Sorry. Come on, granddad. Yeah. Get up there.
Anyway, no, he didn't make many changes. He didn't make many changes. He just played with two up front and pushed them up the field a bit, and we won 2-0. It was like all he'd done really was he'd taken the handbrake off. And the difference between going out to win the game rather than not lose it. Which I think was Unsworth's big failing. He's too cautious, too timid, and that sort of thing just seeps in and undermines and undercuts everything. Anyway, we shall see how we go.
As I said, I told you, I watched a couple of Oldham games live. You know, streamed, and you know, there's a certain amount of. Stuff I can recognise from, it's like Stoke, and you have games where you know you'll get to 70 minutes and you haven't actually had a shot on goal, But you know that the manager's happy because you're still in the game, and you're thinking, yeah, that's not what it's all about. You know, you don't get some sort of bonus point, you know, like the opposite of the rugby, for not conceding as many goals. and it does sometimes feel like that's the way they're playing.
Yeah, it's the difference between, you know, going out and thinking we're going to win this game, or going out and trying not to concede a goal, playing for the clean sheet.
I'll talk about Stoke in a minute. I think Mr. Neil has been in charge for 46 games at Stoke so far, and we failed to score in 20 of them, which is quite high, yikes. I think. Yeah. Anyway, I was going to ask you a thing, you know, because obviously you've had your fair share of drama at Boundary Park over the years. Did you do a tennis ball protest?
Yes, we did that.
Oh, right. Because
I saw that Sheffield Wednesday did one just this week, didn't they? Against Middlesbrough.
Yes, and it's the anniversary of the first ever tennis ball protest.
Is it?
1998. I'm going to tell you this because I know you like things like this. So the origin of the tennis ball protest was Hull. Because Hull were owned by David Lloyd.
Okay.
The tennis player who has the David Lloyd tennis set. Yes, right. And they went away. They went away to Bolton, and that was the first time. Yeah, they threw tennis balls on.
Are you sure it was a protest? And they weren't just going, "You'll like this. You'll like these."
Yes. Put those in your big bag,
David.
Yeah, in your big bag for your practice. When you're practicing.
here's some for you. This will save you a bob or two.
Hey, you'll recognise that. He can't speak a bloody player, but he'll recognise that. So very quickly, about Stoke, and you mentioned Neil Warnock. So brilliant. There's been a fantastic bit of intrigue this week whereby Neil Warnock has insisted on staying on.
For the game to come very shortly.
Yes, against Stoke.
Yeah.
Because he has unfinished business with Stoke.
No, does he?
Yes.
Really?
Oh, yes. And there's no team he'd rather beat than Stoke.
Really?
And he can't tell us now, but once he's retired, which is tomorrow, he'll let us know. It's fantastic. I love it. I'm so excited by this.
Wow.
No idea what it is. Yeah.
I'll tell you one club he would never come back to manage is Oldham. He had a bloody miserable time there.
Oh, he actually did manage you, did he?
Yeah.
Was this around the Notts County years?
97-98. At the time that Warnock came to Oldham, he had a brilliant record of getting every club he'd ever managed promoted.
That's right. Yeah.
Which it was Notts County. It was Scarborough, I think, wasn't it? And he'd managed three or four clubs by then and got them all promoted, and we broke his streak.
Yeah. Well, and of course, but that's good because that means you can just go up to him and say, "Not so clever now, are you? Hey, Bertie, big bollocks."
Oh well, I look forward to hearing what the beef he has with Stoke.
Fascinated. I'm very excited about it. Just a couple more things about Stoke. I mean, we lost at Norwich. You know, in a game that I sometimes I watch games. You know, I don't want to be too cynical, and I just think they've told the players, if we score a goal, we'll win. You know that, don't you? Because they won't try and score a goal. and also, I love it when fans listen to opposition managers and are encouraged when they go, well, we've beaten Stoke, but, you know, they'll be there or thereabouts come the end of the season. And you're thinking, you don't even mean that. You're just saying that because that makes your win look better. It's nothing to do with us at all.
And you feel like the follow-up question is, where or whereabouts?
Exactly so. And the other thing I want to say, the big news in the city at the moment is they're having another, would you call it a putsch? Would you call it?
I'd need to know more.
Well, they're having a big citywide, let's be honest, go at cleaning up chewing gum off the streets.
Okay.
Pleased me because it reminds me that the last time they wanted to do this was about 20 years ago, and they asked me to front it. They said we'd like you to have your face on the side of a bus. Okay, you understand what we're saying, don't you? It's about you know, people have done the tuna. I said, yeah, yeah, I understand that. He goes, yeah, and you'll love this. And what we'd like to do is we'd like to have you, and you know how the bus thing can go all the way along under the windows. Yes. We'll have you, okay, you'll love this. We'll have you, okay, and your face is there, and you're sat down, and then your legs go under the windows, and you say, they think it's all over the bottom of my shoe. and there's your shoe, and there's some chewing gum there. And I said to them, I understand your pain, but to be honest, no, I'm not fucking doing that, I'm afraid.
Did they say, have you got Gary Lineker's number?
Yes. Walkers, beware, because you'll have chewing gum under your shoe. You see it? It's
oh, good. Oh, good. Yes. Anyway, onto the world of other football. We've been following, haven't we, the fallout from the Luis Rubiales thing, the Luis Rubiales kiss heard around the world. It's the story that just keeps on developing. Luis Rubiales, the former now president of the Spanish Football Federation, has been banned from coming within 200 metres of Jenny Hermoso, the snog victim.
Do you know why that is? Do you know why that is?
Go
His
on.
Tongue is 198 metres long. That's
well,
the
do
reason.
You know? Well, yeah, you know, state prosecutors were disappointed. They were asking for 500 metres. I think it's even longer than that. And at the weekend, 39 Spain women football players had refused to be called up for the upcoming Nations League games, but saying they didn't feel in a safe place. But the new coach then named 15 of them anyway, but not Jenny Hermoso, apparently, not punishing her for being the victim, but protecting her, and not because if she was at the game, then Luis Rubiales wouldn't be able to go. Because...
and he'd have to go in the away end.
Yeah, he's got tickets apparently. So, and the players reiterated their desire to boycott, whereupon the Spanish Football Federation threatened them. This is the thing: threatened them with fines, with bans from the national team, and even withdrawal of their licenses to play at all. Now, threats, you see, that's a thing that really helps with the whole feeling in a safe place thing.
Absolutely,
isn't it? You know, they don't feel in a safe place. Well, let's threaten them. You know? Oh, dear. But apparently this situation has been resolved, according to Spain's Secretary of State for Sport, Victor Francos, who looks a right thug. But anyway, there's been agreement over changes to equality policies, advances in equal pay, improving the infrastructure of women's sport. And to show how much agreement there is, Spain have set up a commission to monitor the agreed changes, which is expected to take as long to set up as it's taking us to set up an independent regulator. But...
That's a good idea.
It is a good
idea. That's a good idea.
But the main thing is the Spain women's team will be changing their badge so it's the same as the one for the men's team. Which is nice, isn't it? So, you know, when Ballon d'Or winner Alexis Putellas was asked at Barcelona Airport this week how she felt about the situation, she said, well, bad. So, you know, that's all sorted. That's the last we're going to be hearing of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And just because we're not going to be able to cover the Champions League very much, but I did watch the Newcastle game, which is Man City won as well. Great work for the Man City fans singing to the Red Star fans, you'll never win this, you'll never win this, and thinking that Red Star won it in 1983, but there you go.
But a long time ago,
Anyway.
But fuck them. That's what I say.
There were a number of things. I knew it was going to be 0-0. I knew it was going to be 0-0 because Newcastle got in trouble for getting there late because there was a storm. And I just was so pleased that it was the storm before the calm. That was what I knew was going to happen.
So good. Yeah. I'm looking out for Union Berlin in the playing tonight away at Real Madrid, who are a fan owned by financed by 40,000 supporter memberships. And 5 years ago in Bundesliga 2, then promoted, then played in the Conference League, the UEFA Conference League, then the Europa League, and now the Champions League. So meanwhile, Hertha Berlin, their big brother rivals, City rivals, have been relegated. Currently owned by 777, the guys who just bought Everton.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they've apparently been very good at finding players who move on and then replaced by just as good, like Brighton do or Brentford do. They sold Taiwo Awoniyi to Forest last year.
But unlike
Brighton, they don't have a brand spanking new stadium. Their stadium is a 22,000 capacity ground with only 3,000 seats in it. Now, they would be allowed to play Champions League football there, but they've chosen to move their games to Hertha Berlin's Olympia Stadium, which seats 75,000. And a lot
including
of their...
Including Hitler.
Yes. And Jesse Owens' mum and dad. Yeah.
Yes.
But the fans are really worried about that. I mean, you know, on the one hand, there's 40,000 supporter members who finance the thing, so they can all go, which they wouldn't be able to otherwise. But they're worried about, and they were worried about being promoted to the Bundesliga, that the club's identity is going to be diluted by success, because they're all about, Union Berlin are all about the match day experience. They're all about the pie. They're all about the beer. They're all about the getting together with your mates. They're all about that. They're not about the things that success brings. That
they're,
they
not about monetizing, Chris.
No,
they're not
they're
about
not
monetizing.
They're not about being Hertha Berlin, basically.
Yeah. Well, yes. Know? And this is very much like the St. Pauli and Hamburg deal in Hamburg, isn't it? Where St. Pauli.
Well, there are a few in Germany, aren't there?
It's a
match day experience oriented.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Dortmund, of course, or another one. It's very interesting, though, that. Yeah, the concept of there being a team that has a socialist
vibe about
ethos.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, this happens in Germany. Germany, since the war, has been, let's not get too historical about it, but has been this strange conflagration of the, you know, the efficient
yes, efficient rail network. Yeah.
Money making machine, but also this dislike of anything far right, you know, and their football's the cheapest to watch. They've got all of these, and they're still very successful, and they win World Cups and things. But it's something that we kind of don't get here, and it comes back to the thing I was talking to you about the other week about money blindness, which is, you know, most clubs, because most clubs aren't successful. That's the nature of the way that football works.
Yeah.
If somebody shows them some money, they'll go slathering all over it. Straight away.
Well, absolutely, and you know they're all still stuck in the era of Wall Street, aren't they? The greed is good thing in 1988.
And
speaking of money blindness, unbelievably, we're coming up to yet another bumper Premier League TV rights deal with, you know, eye-watering figures being bandied around, the price being driven up by the possibility of some upstart concern getting their hands on some games. So Sky and now what are they called? TNT having to fork out even more to preserve their very reason for being. And it's being suggested that wall-to-wall football on Sunday is a possible innovation. Four games at 12 and 2 and 4:30 and 6:30. And it's a good week to be suggesting that, considering how duff last Sunday was.
Yes.
But, you know, late evening kickoffs mean no away fans, because it's on a Sunday. You know, they'll pick games that people can't get back from. And apparently there are, you know, all the American owners are lobbying behind the scenes for the 3 o'clock Saturday blackout to go this time, claiming it's a gateway drug for illegal streamers, apparently. That's what they're calling it.
So if they start illegally streaming football, where do they go from? Where's the heroin in this marijuana of illegal streaming?
I don't know. In fairness, it's their metaphor, not mine.
Did you see
in terms of watching football that the best pub to watch sport award at the 2023 Great British Pub Awards? Do you see which won that? You won't be able to guess. It was won by the Royal Dyche. Royal Dyche in Burnley, which is a pub named after Sean Dyche, with a pub sign that's like Sean Dyche's head on a portrait that might be a Holbein King Henry or something like that, Henry VIII or something similar. Yeah, and they decided not to change the name when Dyche was sacked in 2022. And the whole place is a shrine to Burnley. And that's the best place to watch sport, apparently.
There's a number of pubs in... I'm saying a number. You've told me one. I can tell you one.
Yeah, the number is one.
There's two. There's the Jimmy McElroy is just
is
up
there?
The road.
Oh,
from
right.
Turf.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
okay. I was very interested in some of the other awards at the British Pub Awards. They're the best chef, best sustainable pub, best pub for food, which is not necessarily the same as best chef. Figure that one out. You know, best
well,
pub garden.
It goes out the kitchen and they're spitting it. That's what happens there, mate.
Best pub for dogs. Presuming they have card tables in the function room for poker night. But best car park for brick-based fighting, apparently, is another.
There we are. I'm assuming that was in Stoke. Just to go back to Newcastle very, very briefly, there were things about it I really liked. There was the enjoyment of your Dan Burns and your Jacob Murphys and these players who are Newcastle fans.
Yeah.
Since they were very young, you know. And it did occur to me that, you know, in that sort of strange football plutocracy, this was their great, great, great dream. And you think, do you know, there are people at rich clubs that make their debut in the Champions League. Do you know what I mean? Whereas they've been waiting years and years and years and years and years and years and years. There were two other things that really got to me was the joy of the commentator describing Milan as the Rossoneri. Like they do with Juventus, the old lady of Turin, or the Vieira, the Signora. Do you think that foreign commentators are going, well, the pensioners of Chelsea today are playing? It seems so unlikely. And the other thing that pleased me so much was that Eddie Howe took a lot of criticism last weekend, and he said, I'm immune to criticism. And you've got to think he's been speaking to Mohammed bin Salman. I tell you what I want to do there, Eddie, son.
Yeah.
Fuck him.
It's just right off. It's just water off a duck's back to me. Anyone who points out the bone sore thing, asks me anything, it's water off a duck's back.
Yeah, waterboarding off a duck's back is what it is.
Waterboarding a duck. Oh, dear. Yeah. Just before we go, you were talking about the Union Berlin, we were talking about Germany, and you were talking about modern Germany. I'm interested that Harry Kane is there. We shall see him tonight playing against Manchester United, won't we?
Because we're watching Stoke play Huddersfield, but there you go.
Good for you. Yeah, but the way is clear now, sad news, but the way is clear now for Harry Kane to become Germany's favourite Englishman following the sad death this week of...
Lord Haw-Haw.
Well, exactly, of Roger Whittaker. Did you know that Roger Whittaker was Germany's favourite Englishman? I didn't know that.
No.
And apparently, yes, he took over the title from Lord Haw-Haw many years ago.
Yes, and Lord Haw-Haw got it from P.G. Woodhouse, apparently. Anyway, let's leave the whole thing. And well done for not mentioning Russell Brand.
Oh!
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.